Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So, welcome to another episode, week six of the Tiger Mile Report recap here at TigerMLReport.com. I'm Riley Casillo, same as Chris Brown. And for some of you, this is, I was here Thursday because softball's been, I keep telling everybody, yeah, I'll call in, but it's bad audio and I don't want to ruin the audio experience. And so I've been doing some video segments. So this is nice to catch up. We'll talk a little bit of the Tigers, of course, too, as they did take a game over Seattle, and they open up a two-game series, the Pirates, starting on Tuesday, and plenty to get to, though, too, across the minor league system. Welcome, everybody who's watching us on YouTube. Thank you so much. Stan, good to see you. Alex and Sir Dusty, and we got a chance to go to West Michigan last night. We'll talk about what we saw there, and also Justin Henry Molloy breaks out of a slump in a big way, in a big week. So there's plenty of that going on. Chris, how was your Sunday? How was your Mother's Day?
It was really good. Thank you. We had a brunch with both my mother and my father and my mother-in-law and my wife. And it was nice. So we hung out for a bunch, then we came home and relaxed. And I watched a bunch of baseball. I watched the Tigers come back and win, which was nice to see after a rough first couple games of the series. And it's on the whole, it was a solid week in the minors too. So we were watching a bunch of games like that. Yeah, just a good weekend. I hope everybody who still has their mother was still able to enjoy Mother's Day, and those of you who do not were able to remember her in a way that was calming and happy for you, and not a bummer.
Yeah, and it was great. The way I honored my mom was I made chunky beef burritos, and my mom made a lot of different things, but the reason why I did that is because first and foremost, those are pretty simple to make, but I really wanted to look at just a giant thing of food. So I had a burrito. But my mother, I think she had three signature dishes. She had yellow rice and chicken, or arroz con pollo, frijoles, black beans or rice. She made it a certain way that was really good. And then she made that with the shredded Cuban pork. Mm. And then her third dish was spaghetti. Now, I know it sounds like spaghetti seems like a simple thing. For whatever reason, though, I've never had spaghetti like this, nor since. Somehow she made it dry. Like, she made the sauce mixed in there to the point where I always saw spaghetti on commercials where the sauce was on top of the noodles. But my mom mixed it in there with the noodles already and with the meat. And my son explained it to me. He's like, "Dad, it's dry spaghetti." And I thought about it, and it's just, yeah, that's how she did it. And that was her, one of her signature dishes, but
literally mom's spaghetti.
Yeah, mom's spaghetti. Although, sure. It's not as of a cool story as M&M, but nevertheless.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. She, after a while, she got fancier and made it with bread and all that jazz. But anywho, on to the show. But the Tigers win today, come back from behind. That was a really nice win, especially because Seattle was just mystifying them the entire week. And they definitely needed it. In terms of the offense came to a grinding halt. And one of the things I liked about the series too was the at bat today from Akil Baddoo getting that double. Zach McKenzie starting things off, and he continues to do well. Then there was a headline in MLB, Nick Maton was, and then it's just like, you're like, look at the numbers, but then stuff going on in Toledo, you're like, okay. The Justin Henry Molloy call him up banter, if you will, was quiet until this weekend. And by the way, I want to thank everybody who donated to the GoFundMe too. So thank you again for everybody who did that, and anybody who's joined the Patreon. And of course, if you want to participate in our super chats,
exquisite,
you can go ahead and do. But because yesterday, you made that for possible to do West Michigan. But yeah, Justin Henry Molloy this week decided to break out of a slump and just went ham crazy, Chris. And let's go start with the stats here. 9 for 22. And he wasn't the best in the system. We'll get to who was the best in the system. Justin Malloy, 9-for-22, 3 home runs, and 6 RBIs, and batted a pretty impressive slash line. And Stan, he has a knee injury, by the way, just as it had Ryan Kreidler. Yeah. Injury. He was inquiring of who had a knee, what was going on, Kreidler.
As far as we know, though, I think it's just like a knee bruise. It's not like a torn ligament or anything like that. It's yeah, but it sounds like it's pretty bad. If he's never heard much from him in a while, so.
Yeah, we haven't, in terms of even from an update standpoint, too, they haven't, no one down in Detroit has said anything, so it's been pretty quiet down there when it comes to that. But, no, Justin Malloy, as soon as he hit that home run today, and I was looking at what Nick Maton was doing, I was like, oh, boy, here we go. And you knew it was going to, the call-up chant was going to get louder and louder and louder. And after teams figured out Malloy, and look, and I will say this, the Iowa Cubs had some really good pitchers. There were some, oh man, I think it was, I want to say Thursday or Friday, they took a guy on, I think it was, yeah, maybe it was Friday when they got blown out 10-2, or maybe, I can't remember exactly what it was, I'm trying to find his name, but the guy who came in with an ERA of 0.95 or something like that, just Brown, is the same
Ben,
as you?
Ben Brown. Yeah, he came to them and traded with the Phillies last year. And yeah, he was throwing mid to upper 90s all game with a couple nasty hooks. Yeah, they have some interesting arms down there. And that was the thing. Like, today's game was Kyle Hendricks. He says, and so was Monday's, I believe, right? Or Tuesday's, I should say.
Yeah. And Hendricks, his velocity's down, by the way. He was at 86, 87 a whole game, too. He wasn't really throwing really hard.
He's always been, like, I don't know the last time he, like, sat around 90. He's always been that super rare, like, plus-plus control command righty who doesn't throw very hard. He's got to change up. But yeah, Malloy got him for the home run today. I don't know if he got him on Tuesday as well. I don't think so. But yeah, they got to him a little bit, and the pitching stepped up a little bit today. It was, and the Mudhens were on a 9-game losing streak. They lost the first game to the, or 4 games of the series. It was brutal. And then they finally came back to win the last two, which helps you salvage a little bit of the credibility. But they went from, they were, I think, 19-8. And are now 20-18 or something like that.
And there was that home run on a 79-mile-an-hour something that didn't do anything, didn't break or do anything. Just sat there and spinned up there. But yeah, there is, he definitely had a good week. And one of the things too that stood out to me was, in terms of speaking of had a good week, was Austin Bergner. He just appeared in one game, came in and struck out 8, which is highly unusual, maybe again because the Cubs haven't seen him before, but 8 strikeouts, Bergner's not a strikeout pitcher by no stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, it was interesting. So they brought him, they just sent him up from Erie. He made it up to Toledo at the end of last year, and then he started back in Erie this year, and he struggled in Toledo a ton. And he came up and came out of the bullpen, and I want to say he struck out 5 of the first 6 batters he faced, and it's 89 to 91 with his fastball. But his curveball, his slider, and his changeup were all just absolutely giving Cubs hitters fits. They couldn't handle any of them. It was hilarious. I was cutting it up just because it's kind of fun to watch. But yeah, that was a promising thing. There was a period last year we was doing that stuff in Erie, and we thought, hey, this guy might have something. But yeah, it's so hard when you're not throwing, when you're barely cracking 90 miles an hour, which has always just been a little bit mystifying because that's not who he was in college. But the secondary stuff is there. It is legit. And he had all 3 of his secondary pitches working, and that's why he was getting so many swings and misses. He must have had 15 swings and misses in the 4 innings, maybe more. It was wild. So that was good to see. But yeah, I mean, it was a 2-2 start week for Reese Olson. It's just more of the same with him. He actually did pitch better today, but it still was, what, how many innings did he pitch? 8 innings this week?
Yeah, still in that effect.
So 8 innings and 2 starts, and it was... Yeah, 12 hits, 5 earned runs, 8 walks, and 7 strikeouts. It's not really working for him as a starter. I think you keep getting him in the innings because he needs the innings, but I think we all know this is headed to the bullpen eventually.
Yeah, there's one of the things, too, about Bergner is that we saw him start, like we mentioned earlier, but like his numbers on the surface, outside of having one bad appearance against Bowie, he's been... And oh, actually, I'm sorry. I take that back. He had the second appearance against Portland where he walked 5. 29 strikeouts in 22 innings of work. The walks is where he didn't, I don't remember him walking as much as he did last year. So maybe it's just like a touch and feel kind of thing. So getting back to the Tigers for a moment, as my wife is hysterically laughing, you do realize everyone can hear you, right? I should close the door.
Was it Instagram? What's going on?
She has TikTok. That's her thing, TikTok. But no, so getting back to the Tigers real quick, because there was a couple questions on how long Scope is on this team, and I think that's a legitimate question to the point where we just can't ignore it anymore. Probably by the end of the month, I would just assume, based off his numbers. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, too, was Saturday's start by Alex Faedo, who I wrote an article about him last week on the minor league site, because it was looking at some of the numbers a little bit in his swing and miss stuff, which has been there. And he started figuring things out towards the end of his time in Toledo, and he came up and had a quality start. He pitched really good on Saturday and gave the Tigers exactly what they needed. I think he had the best start of the weekend, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Boyd was awful, and so was Wentz. Didn't get out of the third inning, right?
Yeah. And the other thing, too, about the weekend, too, that I wanted to talk about, because I wasn't here on Thursday before we get back into Toledo, I wanted to ask a question about the Spencer Turnbull situation, because that whole thing, so being in the clubhouse, I admittedly have not been down in a game in about a couple weeks just because of personal stuff that's going on, but I'm going to get down there for the Pirates series and not miss a series for the rest of the year. So that's my goal. One of the things about Turnbull is that he talks to the media, says his thing, and kind of quiet and does his thing, whatever. And, oh, thank you, Stan.
Exquisite.
That ball is gone. Such a all time.
Stan.
Thank you, Stan. But yeah, there's I think that one of the things about this whole situation is that it wasn't, people are saying it's a manipulation of service time or anything. I think personally, he was pissed he got sent down to Toledo. And as Jason Beck pointed out, I believe on Twitter, that the injury started when he almost got that comeback or a stinger, if you will, against Boston. And then he went out and hired Scott Boras. Now, people are just like, he's going to try to get as much money as he can. Of course, that's what he's going to do. He is 30, which is strange to think that. I keep thinking like he's younger, but he's not. I know he's not. But that whole situation was bizarre, Chris. I just think that it was a sense of pride, perhaps a little bit of mismanagement by the Tigers. I don't know. I just know enough to know that it was just, the whole situation just seemed awkward.
Yeah, it's. The timing is certainly fishy of him changing agents and getting an IL stint instead of a trip to the minors. But it does sound like it was at least they brought a specialist who would confirm that, yes, his neck is hurt. But yeah, I think professional athletes are competitors. They certainly don't want to get sent down. I was just going to say, maybe that's part of what's going on with some of these guys in Erie who were in Erie all last year, or even made it up to Toledo, like Bergner, and then are back down in Toledo, Erie to start the year. It's got to be tough to deal with that when you've gotten so close and then now you're taking a step back. But yeah, I think Turnbull, I don't think the Tigers cared one bit about his service time. I don't think they're trying to manipulate his service time. It just so happens that if by sending him down, it would have affected his service time. And I think it's his right to protest that and not want to lose that, because you're talking about potentially millions of dollars. We've seen Turnbull, when he's at his best, is a pretty good big league pitcher. He's just rarely been at his best. It was basically like a handful of starts there in 2021. So they wanted him down. Harris said they wanted him to go down and work on some stuff. And the major leagues, he said big league baseball or major leagues is not a good place to work on things. And so they figured out a way to make it so he'll get his 3 or 4 rehab starts in that he was going to get anyway. But now it's as a rehab outing, so it doesn't affect his service time, and they can hopefully get things worked out and get him back up in the rotation. But yeah, I don't know. I think basically he was probably blindsided by it, and that's what led to everything else that happened. He probably was complaining and all that stuff, and then finally admitted that, hey, my neck hurts a little bit. Maybe that's why. Boras came out and said, yeah, you can tell he's hurt. He doesn't give up home runs. That is true. He's only given up 2 home runs in a game once before, but that might also be just convenient. But
I think that's more convenient, because I think that if you look at Turnbull's stuff, a lot of his stuff has been middle zone. It hasn't had the slider at times. It started getting better in the last couple starts, but overall, I think he was still figuring things out. After surgery, it's going to take some time, of course. And so I wasn't expecting Turnbull to be perhaps what he was until probably middle of this month, towards the end of beginning of June. But the last couple starts have been bad. And when he went down to Lula, I wasn't surprised. I was actually somewhat surprised because, again, we're not used to the team just going, you're gone, and being so quick about it. And no, and Connor's right. There's guys who, like you were saying in the chat, one of those things that a player thinks he can play through. Scherzer has been dealing with neck issues for years now. And
yeah, look, because Stan was saying Turnbull in effect lied to the Tigers about his injury, putting himself over the team. That's not him. Like, I care about my, these are competitors. They want to play. They want to play. These guys, and just think of any man who doesn't want to go to the doctor. Like, I know I'm fine. I'll got it out. I'm good. It's like that. And I don't think, I mean, he clearly has service time on his mind, but I don't think he was like, hey, you know, screw the team. I need to get my innings in. I think it was like, I'm good. I belong up here. You shouldn't send me down. But yeah, it's like you're saying, Connor was saying, yeah, that players do this all the time. Players play through, they play hurt all the time. And it's in, that's the thing. Like, I bet you 20 of the guys in the Tigers right now could legitimately go on the injured list with something. Like, oh, I got deep thigh bruise. AJ Hinch could probably go on the injured list. Saw the other day, he looked like he had a big old raspberry on his forehead. We couldn't figure out what there. That's baseball. You're playing with sticks, balls, and it can hurt, and you're running through it. All that stuff. I don't know. Yeah, it's a strange situation, but I don't know. People are like, hey, is Turnbull ever going to pitch for the Tigers again? Like, I think so. I think it's in both parties' interests for him to come up and pitch well with the Tigers. And then perhaps if he does that around the trade deadline, maybe they can work something out. But I don't think if you trade him now, you're going to get pennies on the dollar, basically, for what he could potentially be worth if he's at his best. But I don't know.
Yeah, speaking of his best, too, there's some, I'm not sure if anybody's seen what Connor was talking about. Somebody put it in our YouTube chat here, and I'll link it on the episode description, too. So during Evan Pitzold of Reap asked Connor, or Akil Badu, a question about what was his mindset like when he hit that double.
And yeah, what was going through your head when you hit that double?
And he's like, next question. And he just gave him a weird look. And it's a question that Evan asks all the time too. It's a common thing that he hear in there all the time. And you know, it was weird.
It's an open-ended question. It's a nothing question, right? You want him to say, oh man, I was looking for this and I hit it there. And I was thinking maybe I should go to second. And you just want to get a little quote, and it's easier than saying, you don't want to say a yes or no question. Then you'll get a yes or no. But the media around these guys every day for the most part, and not everybody always gets along all the time, or somebody might say something or do something or be near somebody who says something, and you might have a little friction there. It happens all the time between media and athletes. I remember I've interviewed Kristen Stewart a couple of times long ago in the minors, and I think at one point I tweeted out that he was a bad defender, and Kristen Stewart is one of the few people on Twitter who has blocked me. And I could never figure out why. And there's, oh, probably because I said he was a bad defender and he doesn't want to deal with it. And that's his right. I don't know. It adds a little intrigue, but I don't think it really means anything.
It's just, I think it's just maybe just, it's where, and we're not, I mean, obviously can't play the audio of it because I can't play the audio through here, but look at, it's just, it looks at him like, yeah. Yeah. So, next question.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to me, I don't know. I don't think it's much of anything. It's just like I said, those guys deal with a lot of that anyway, and Evan's a good reporter, so it was one of those things where
I'd be shocked if Evan, after, if they didn't talk about it, or maybe not today, but at some point they'll figure it out. I remember a long time ago, I remember Lynn Henning just went off on David Price on Twitter, and it was something about, I don't remember what it was. It was David Price like coming out of a game early or something, and Lynn went off on him. And then Lynn Price talked to him. They talked to each other, and Lynn apologized too. It was like, sometimes you just have interactions that aren't always pleasant. We used to see videos of those all the time. Remember Lou Piniella and Rob Dibble, and it was a Hal McRae throwing their phone across the coaches or the manager's room.
Oh yeah, I remember that. That was like what, 92, 93, something like that. I remember that. Yeah, that was.
And yeah, I think there's video of like the whole A's trying to fight a reporter or something. It happens.
Yeah. No, and again, it is what it is. I just, maybe the so far when it comes to questions down there, I'll be honest, I've asked few because I am still overwhelmed, but still nerve-wracking, because I'm trying to think of, you gotta be real quick with those questions. And majority of the time, I think of, by the time I think of something, it's usually people have already said what I want to say. Or it usually with Hinch, so it's usually for me, it's thinking of an analytical question. For example, I asked Mason Engler once about him throwing his changeup more versus his slider. But I always, I don't know how I, it's so weird. Sometimes I just go, do you, like I sound like Chris Farley, do you remember the time? Like I'm still, I don't know. I got to find a way to relax a little more because I don't know. I'll get better about it. But with the minor leaguers, I don't have that problem. Minor leaguers, I'm comfortable with. It's just, I don't want.
Yeah, I think it's different too, because a lot of times we don't necessarily, and it was different for you for a while because you did have to write or do kind of game recap type thing. A lot of times they're just looking for a quote or two from a guy that they could put in their gamer, the quote, and then they complete it. It's the interviews before the games and before batting practice and stuff like that, where we just like to talk to guys about what they're thinking, why they're doing what they're doing. And they're like, how did you feel about this event and this game? I don't, game to game stuff doesn't really matter to me that much. Maybe we've talked about this before. If the Tigers start winning a ton, we might even do shows every day. Right. Or if it got to the point where, hey, we need to discuss the four or five things that happened in this game, then maybe, yeah, that matters. But to me, it's more about like the process, these guys getting better and stuff like that. So when you're in a post game scrum or whatever, you're like, I was winning, or how that loss feel. No, you know what? It was great. There's not a lot you can learn from those sessions, I don't think, unless you get like the great, like Chan Hill Park. Yeah. I had a lot of diarrhea.
That's a good one. No, and even one thing I find interesting about living the minors is when you ask somebody, like, for example, we asked Roberto like Campos or somebody like that, just a question about environment too, because this is all for them. Sometimes it's a brand new environment. For major leaguers, this is just an everyday occurrence. Like I said, I'm getting there. It's just going to take some time. But overall, maybe at that point, I do want to take a shower and just want to get it over with. Who knows? I don't know. And it's not that big of a deal to me, but
took a big league detour.
Yeah. And I think it was Cameron on Twitter said something like, you would ask a better question, and you're right. You would probably like, why he like the question that I think his reply was something along the lines of, you would have phrased it like this. Let me see here. Cameron said, I would ask, you've been hitting a lot opposite field double to the left fielder's heads. Is that something you're planning to do, or are you taking what's given to you in that situation? And he says, it's basically the same question, but it allows Baudu to give a non-generic answer if he wants. And he's right. I like the way he phrased it.
Yeah, it's always tough because you're just, when you're in there, you're trying to come up with a question sometimes on the spot. Sometimes you have things you want to ask and somebody else asks it. And you're like, but one of the things I find myself doing, and it would be like he did in that one, is where you almost answer it for them. So is that something you're planning to do, or was it just this? And they'll just go, yeah, it was just that. And you go, shit, I shouldn't have said that.
Oh, yeah, no, but, yeah, no. Yeah, if they could find a way to answer the question easier, they will.
Yeah, that's what I would do. You're interviewing me, and I'm like, big shower.
Yeah.
Let's get food.
Spread's no waiting for nobody, man. You got to get there and get that food quick. All right, so getting back into Toledo, like I said, and then Corey Joyce had a really good week too, 5-for-12, hitting nice 417, and he had a home run too, but it was just the...
Yeah, three extra base hits, I think.
Yeah, and considering...
Four
extra base hits, okay. He didn't really do much in Toledo, or excuse me, Erie, so again, it's one of those things where maybe the right time, right place against a team, like I was... Got some pretty good pitching prospects too, like we mentioned earlier, but good on Joyce to come up there.
Yeah, he had a very brief stint with Toledo last year too, and went absolutely nuts with Toledo last year. I'm looking 7-game. He went 10-for-16 with 2 homers, 5 walks, and 3 strikeouts. And then this time he's with 9 games and he's 8-for-25, 5 walks and 2 homers, 2 triples, a double. Yeah. Something about AAA seems to suit him. Maybe it's the better lighting. But yeah, that was good to see. It was a little production there. It's they were sliding, partially because nobody was really hitting. And Malloy came back to start hitting this week. And Nevin did a good job. And Joyce was doing well. But you're still still seeing a lot of struggles from Parker Meadows and Andre Lipsius, which is, and Meadows was like 4 for 22. Lipsius was like 2 for 22.
Yeah, he was under, he was under 100. Yeah.
His swing is all messed up right now, which is unfortunate. He started to strike out. He struck out 7 times to 2 walks. So he needs to get that figured out. And with Meadows, it feels like he's playing well. He hits the ball hard. He faced a tough lefty today and struck out on 3 pitches. It's not quite there yet for him. The calls for calling him up aren't terribly loud right now. It's back to Malloy. And yeah, it may not be, we touched on it briefly, may not be a whole lot while longer before Scope gets DFA'd. They could also send Maton down, but they're going to need to add a spot on the 40 man. So if they were just going to cut Scope, that would make things easier. I don't know. It does feel like a beginning of June type of move.
Yeah, because at that point, maybe it's contract related too. Those like little specifics about the contract or when he can waive. But as Joyce Wynn and Santa asked in our chat, did Joyce win some sort of 20 award in 2022? I don't.
He didn't. Not that I know of. I know he didn't win the. I think who was the offensive player last year? It was Kerry Carpenter, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Carpenter. Yeah.
And then it was Flores the pitcher of the year?
Yeah, Flores was.
Yeah, so unless they give out like organizational gold gloves, which I don't think they do, maybe I don't know. Maybe he won something. I just am not aware of it right now.
Yeah, Olson. I know Olson won the Rawlings Gold Glove Award.
For pitcher for defense.
All right, so we're getting the Erie. We set up an Erie Yaya Shintouf, the development list, which I thought was interesting. Oh, before I forget, I wanted to go back for a second. I was there when Castro left the game early, and he hadn't pitched since. And so something got tweaked, and so to see him on the IL was a little bit of a delay. But yeah, he did not look good. He pitched, I think it was like the 2 or 3, maybe it was a batter. I don't remember. But I was there with Tiger Mike over on Twitter, and that was a game he had to leave early, so.
Yeah, they brought in 3 new pitchers last week. You mentioned Clay, there was Braden Bristow, and there was also Heath Embry.
Yeah.
None of them did anything really to stand out, but they're not being shy about adding players at every level, basically. They feel like they need help.
Yeah, and they added another pitcher, too, Tim Daughton. So he was another pitcher they added to, and he went down the Erie. But overall, like I mentioned, Michael Beilein went back to West Michigan. He was an organizational stop all-star in 2022. Wow. Corey Joyce.
I'm going to be honest with you. I did not know that they made their own all-star team.
Yeah. I did not know that.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. Good for him. Yeah.
Good pull there, Stan.
Yeah.
But Erie had a good week. They went 5-1. They only lost today to Richmond, and they go back over 500. They're actually in first place. And it's them and Richmond essentially for first place in the Eastern League Southwest. Again, I still think that's a stupid name, and I'll say it again. But in terms of who's had a really good week, Winston Perez had his 11-game hitting streak snap yesterday. Kind of slowed down this week, but still, nevertheless, the bat was still out there. Grant Witherspoon, 6 for 21 with a double and 3 triples. Ben Malgeri, 4 doubles. Four of his 5 hits were doubles. Nice .385 batting average. Brett Erler continues to pitch well. 5 innings, 3 hits, 1-1 on 7 strikeouts. Wilmer Flores, I thought, had a good start too. 5 innings, 4 hits, 1 run on 3 strikeouts. And Ty Madden getting back in the swing of things a little bit. Somebody DM'd me about how, damn, dude, I didn't know his curveball was that good. Yes, it is. And so he had a good week. 5 innings, 3 runs, 3 hits, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. And as far as the bullpen goes, you know who had a good week?
Dario Gardea?
Yeah.
Oh, Billy Lester?
Yeah. And Alex asked a question. Who do you guys see getting promoted to AAA first, Dinkler or Perez? I think they're going to – it depends on position need. So I think if Malloy gets called up, it depends if Malloy gets called up or not. Because then what they could do is put our Andre Lipsius at third if you wanted to. And then Perez at second, and have Perez DH. But right now, I think because Toledo's got three catchers right now. I don't think they have Proparski, Knapp, and who else am I thinking of? Maybe they only have two.
The Donnie Sands.
Donnie Sands, thank you. Yeah, or Donnie Sands. So yeah, I think it would be Perez over Dingler first. Dingler right now is getting back in the swing of things a little bit, but Perez is, I think he was going to start the season in Toledo anyway before his injury.
A couple things. So Perez went, what did he had a decent week. Where did he go? I'm looking 4-for-21, 4 walks. He had 5 steals this week. And this is 100% reckless speculation on my part, but I think his back is still bothering him. From watching him play, he's like limping around when he was running, trying to beat out a double play. He was just not necessarily, like, stole 5 bases. So I don't think he's hurt, but I just feel like he's not 100% right. Cause he's also not hitting for a ton of power lately. He wasn't ever a huge power guy until last year when he showed surprising pop, but it's just, it hasn't been there right now. And so I don't know. Maybe that's just something he's going to have to deal with forever. And Dingler, yeah, came up with a couple big hits, but he went right back to what we've seen. It's the same old song. So yeah, that super hot week. And this week, 4-for-19 with a homer, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. That's just what we've seen from him over the last couple of years. He goes on these strikeout binges, and it's, I don't know. I think that's just always going to be part of his game. We might not see either of them get called up to Toledo. Honestly, I think Rod's right. It's a matter of position if they need somebody up there. Because I think Scott Harris wants to develop that depth where if they had to grab a guy for the Tigers, they could grab him from Toledo or Erie. I think he wants that level of depth in the system. So, yeah, I don't think they're moving anytime soon. But if they do, I think Stan said, when is it traditional for players to move up from AA to AA? It's usually most promotions happen around the middle of the season. It used to coincide nicely with the draft, where yeah. The draft would be in early June and they draft a handful of guys, and guys had done 2-3 months at one level and it looked like they belonged in the next step and they would go up. And now it's really just depends on need. We saw last year, I remember they moved Parker Meadows up after 2 hot weeks. It was really just 1 hot weekend and they moved him up. It took him a while to get it going, but then other guys, you know, they move up in August.
Yeah, Wilmer Flores was moved after what, 17 innings of work?
Yeah, and he was dominant, and he was not being challenged. And there's a player in well, we can talk about that in the next team, but it's a different kind of a different story. But yeah, I know it was a fun week for Erie. They blew out Richmond in their first game, and then the next game was the 1-0 win, I think, where Dingler came up with a big RBI hit in the 8th inning. But something that Greg Ginga said on the broadcast, he said, strange things happen to Erie when they're in Richmond, and strange things happen to Richmond when they're in Erie. And it does seem to be true. He would know better than anybody. Been calling their games for a long time. So that third game, they went into the 9th inning. They were down, I think, 5-4. And it didn't look good. I think Dingler Perez struck out very quickly, like 7 pitches total. And then Grant Witherspoon hit this harmless ground ball at first base. But Richmond's first baseman just completely booted it. It's like, whoops. And then there was a wild pitch. So Witherspoon got the second. And then Gage Workman hit a double, tied the game. And then Daniel Cabrera hit a single to walk him off. And it was kind of wild. And then that kicked off what ended up being a 5-game winning streak. That was, yeah, really one of the better weeks of the season. And a lot of it, I think, and Roger touched on it, was their pitching finally started to look like what we expected it to this year, at least in terms of results.
Yeah. By the way, the answer to Stan's question on YouTube, Cole Cube is this week did not have a good week. He went 2-for-14, and he batted a nice, robust 143. In terms of strikeout wise, he struck out 5 times and to 2 walks. But no, you're getting back to the pitching. You're absolutely correct, Chris. The pitching this week turned back to form a little bit, which they definitely needed because the bullpen, as we've talked about numerous times, has been absolutely been waxed in terms of innings used, and they needed some really good starting pitching performances. And Madden has, like I said, Madden's been hit and miss, but the last couple starts, I feel like he's get back to what that first start was against Akron, where he just looked dominant. And the only one that has been consistent is Hurdler. Even I know that we're looking at Montero's numbers this week, 8 innings, 14 hits, 5 earned runs, but 12 strikeouts, 2 walks. And so to me, even take away, somebody mentioned this, there's a YouTube comment about some of the potential with Montero there. I think there's still a lot of potential there. And so You kind of ignore those numbers and go, all right, this is a guy who's only pitched, 3 starts in AA, and he's still he's still racking out the strikeouts. So that slider, I saw it was a pitch earlier in the week where he just had the sliders just one pitch against the lefty and it just disappeared off the face of the planet. Yeah.
His first start of the week, I think you clipped that one up on Tuesday, was his home debut, and it was really pretty good. And today he was good for a few innings and then got hit pretty hard or gave up some run. And it's just, he's a guy, we've talked about him before, he's learning how to pitch. And sometimes he just finds way too much of the zone. Sometimes his breaking ball will just land right in the heart of the zone. Sometimes he'll throw a fastball right down the middle when guys are ready for it. And it's, he just needs to fix his command slightly. And I think he's going to have some growing pains in Double A this year, but I think he'll be fine down the road. There's still some reliever risk there. There's with a lot of these guys, it's something, their delivery isn't picture perfect and he's not the biggest dude, but there's a lot to like there with Montero. And so he's been a good addition, but yeah. So Flores and Madden both had good starts.
Sawyer
Gibson Long with 5 innings and 2 earned runs. They're capping guys now at 5 innings. They were 4, now they're at 5. I don't know if they're going to let him go 6 next month or what, but so yeah, he's you know, turn long as an innings eater as much as you can be. But yeah, Flores still, he's pitching better. He did, according to the broadcast, touch 97 the other day, which is something we haven't seen yet this year, really. But it's not as electric as he was last year at times. And so it's hard to figure out what's going on there. His delivery seems a little less in sync at times. He's spinning off even more. He was never a picture perfect finish or anything like that. But yeah, he's still a work in progress. Madden, like you said, Madden's getting better. We still haven't seen him get back to that just looked filthy in his first start. But he's been good. And he's showing flashes of a lot of good stuff. This is what we expected from these guys, that it was going to be a strong rotation and they were going to help lead the to win or keep them in a lot of games. And this week what happened was they just got about everybody. We mentioned Colt Keith wasn't great, but you got up there. Grant Witherspoon had a good week.
Julio Rodriguez. Trey Cruzell was a week too.
Yeah. He only had a couple hits, but he walked 8 times, 7, 8 times. And so he was on base all the time. He did it home run, I think. So yeah, they just got, not everybody hit. I think Jake Holton didn't do much of anything and Workman didn't play a ton, but they got enough contributions from enough different guys that they were able to win 5 games. So it was big for him.
So we did get a question on Twitter, why is Workman playing sporadically? And the only thing we can tell you is that it's based off, they're just scheduling it that way. And there's nothing more about it we can really talk about. But essentially, they're just trying to see what else everybody else can do. In other words, getting to,
there's a new GM. The Tiger system, a new president.
Bingo.
And so sometimes new presidents want to see things happen. And that's about as specific as we'll get right now. And I'm sure 6 months will tell you everything you need to know. But yeah, they're just, it was a good week. I don't know who they play next.
They play Harrisburg. Yeah, it's right up there. Right. Put it right there. But always.
I can't read or look at things.
Oh,
I can't read.
Yeah, they're at Harrisburg next week. By the way, Toledo is going to be on the road again. They're going to be in Omaha next week. So they continue their...
Somewhere in middle America.
Yeah, they're going to do the Heart of America tour in the middle of... go to two of the most boring states in the union, perhaps. Somebody out there is going to tell me that Nebraska is really cool, but I don't think so. Somebody's going to say, maybe they will. I don't know. But
I hear there's a good steak out there, right?
Is there?
I don't know. They always talk about Omaha steaks. I don't know.
Oh, is that a company where they mail steaks?
Yeah. I assume they're based out of Omaha. Maybe not. It's one of those New York City salsa things. But
New York City. All right, we're getting way too sidetracked. Okay, let's get back in. That's our ADHD kicking in. And here, okay, so in terms of transactions this week, not much going on in West Michigan, but the justice for all, Justin Bigby, 13 for 21. 2 home runs, 9 RBIs, and this guy should be this guy will probably win the Midwest Player of the Week. Batted cool 619, 680. Slugging percentage was ridiculous.
Yeah, I would be shocked if it's anybody other than Justice Big. Honestly, I didn't look to see who else did anything, but you got 13 hits. You said 2 homers. It was also 4 doubles, was it?
Yeah, 4 doubles, yeah.
Yeah, four doubles, four walks, four strikeouts. We saw him on Saturday night. He did hit a breaking ball about 400 feet to center field that was caught. But I've been watching him a little bit more closely. They drafted him as a first baseman out of, I want to say, Western Carolina, something like that. A 19th rounder. And, you know, he's a little bit older. He's 24, I think, in high A, so you don't make much of that. But he's really just been socking the ball in a lot of really hard contact in the opposite field. Today his home run, I think, was left center. So he pulled it a little bit. But, yeah, he looks like a guy who doesn't belong at high A anymore. This is the kind of performance from guys when they're ready to move up. The problem is he's not a priority prospect. He's a 19th rounder. So it's not going to be a Parker Meadows situation where he had a hot week and they're going to send him up because they want to see what he has. And there's really not room in Erie right now. You know, they were dying for an outfielder earlier in the year. And then Ben Malgeri was the one who got called up. And so I don't know what they're going to do with Justice Bigby. They might just let him tucker himself out with all these hard hits and come back to earth. But I don't see particularly like a future big leaguer there. But then again, I didn't really see that with Kerry Carpenter. And what he did was he kept hitting until you couldn't ignore him anymore. So it would be cool if Justice Bigby got a chance to go up to Double-A and hit some more. And I honestly think he actually is a little bit more defensively versatile than Kerry Carpenter was, because he can play first base.
Yeah.
It would be interesting if he got called up, but we'll see what happens. But I do think you're right. He's almost certainly going to be the Midwest League hitter of the week.
So I want to talk about yesterday, what we've seen a little bit. There was a couple things that first and foremost, shout out to Tony Paul of the Detroit News. We had a chance to sit down and talk to him yesterday. It was the first time. Usually I see him in the press box, but we don't get a chance to talk. But it was good to talk to him. We're talking about prospects, and it was funny. He was there to interview Chase Young, and then he was like, I heard Roberto Campos is pretty shaky on the outfield. We're like, oh, no, he's good. He's solid. And then he goes out there. And West Michigan, they had two players collide at one point yesterday.
We should just talk about that game. In terms of, now we love going to any minor league game. It doesn't matter. We see people. Oh. It was great. Was that Reds or Bullers promoting Matt McClain? Yeah, that's good news. He's been hitting the cover off the ball with them in Louisville, I think. But yeah, it that was one of the worst kind of, in terms of getting good looks at guys or seeing stuff, one of the worst games I've been to for Whitecaps. They lost 6-0. It was defensively, it was like that Tigers game versus the Cardinals where they just decided to make four errors in one inning. Remember? Yeah. It was, so yeah, we saw Tony Paul and it was nice to talk to him and he's out there. I would expect to see articles about West Virginia guys sent from him. So make sure you read those. And yeah, he was like, yeah, I heard that Campos is the butcher in the outfield. And I was like, no, it's been great. Two innings, three misplays. It was, the first one was bizarre. It was like he could have caught a ball, but ran like 20 feet in front of it.
That's just going to happen. What was that? Yeah.
It was like he was sprinting to center field. We don't know if he lost it in the sun. It was just weird. And they had Austin Murr playing center field, which is unusual. Campos has been playing center field mostly. And it looks like those two have never talked to each other before because, yeah, there was another play where they literally ran into each other. And yeah, it was ugly, but it wasn't just him. We also talked about Isaac Pacheco, and Tony said he had heard that Pacheco is an awesome defender and is big league
ready. Major league ready, yeah.
And what did he do with his first two chances? Like, he booted him. And he didn't have a couple of nice plays later, but it was like, yeah, see Pacheco play well. I like his defense. I wouldn't say it's major league ready yet, but yeah. And then we saw Josh Couch, bad throw to second, got center field, and it was just an ugly game all around. And it seemed like every time that Erie had or West Michigan had a chance to score, it was like, boom, double play, pop up, strikeout. It was an ugly game. Nobody did. The most notable things we saw, I think, Roberto Campos hit a fly out to center field, like a line drive about 402 feet. It was like right to the wall that Junior Perez caught. And then we saw Jace Young hit a really hard foul ball.
I think 109. They hit that 109. We know that.
109 miles per hour. Yes.
We're not going to tell you how we know that, but we know that.
Yes. I raced against it and I beat it. That's how we know. I could run 110, and so it was very close.
Even Soretti, I thought that Soretti, there was a kind of a defensively, there was a couple notes I took. First and foremost, I took a lot of the pictures that I'll be posting because I had a nice camera, but Soretti. I haven't really, I usually try to zero in on one or two players that I have not really had a chance to zero in on. And Soretti, that was the first time I've seen Soretti live. So I wanted to, in terms of, I took some notes and defensively, and Chris and I were talking about this during the game, that at some point maybe he'll move over to second. But overall, I thought he did a really good job of positioning, playing a short, his approach to the plate too. He had a hit, and I think it was in the seventh or eighth inning. But overall, I came away impressed with Dane Soretti as a guy who will probably continue to fly under the radar. I'm not sure what his ceiling is, but I'm a fan. And it's a fan, but I like his game a lot.
Yeah, and sure enough, today he gets a tailor-made double play ball hit right to him and boots it. This was actually one of his worst weeks, I think, as a hitter. I think he only had like 4 hits, and he actually had some rough swing. But for the most part, I keep comparing him to Andre Lipsius because it reminds me of that sort of, he's just a very competent infielder and competent hitter. He puts the bat on the ball. He doesn't swing and miss much. He's aggressive. He doesn't walk a ton, but he walks enough, I think. And he doesn't swing and miss hardly ever. And he hits a lot of bloopers to down the left field line or pulls it through the hole between first base and second base. But yeah, normally he's sure-handed, makes quality plays. He and Young had an awesome double play today. I don't know if you saw that. I put it up. Young made a diving stop behind second base, lifted it.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, that was nice. I'm gonna put it. That's what I'm trying to pull up right now.
And then Soretti made a jump throw, and it was, yeah, those. And we talked about, like, Jace Young. Jace Young had probably his best week as a pro, I would say. And I haven't gone looked at week by week, but you see him 8 for 22. He had 7 walks to 2 strikeouts, hit a home run. And he is a quality defender without a ton of range. But he makes almost every play that he can get to, which is fine.
One of the things, too, that stood out to me, there was another one you caught too. The Carlos Mendoza play was really nice too.
Yeah, outfield. Yeah, that was the bases loaded, and he made a sliding catch, and then it was a sack fly, but they ended up getting out of that with only 1 run scoring, I think.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, Stan makes good points. It's tough to name only 5 Wildcat players when the team is doing so well, and they're rolling along. I think this is a Whitecaps team, comparatively speaking to last year, where you saw that. The Whitecaps, Brian Pena did some sort of, you know, Santeria or something like that, because some of the magic he did pulled off last year with, they were losing guys left and right. And this time, this is a team that's been together pretty much for the most part, but this is the play we're talking about. Watch this on YouTube. Check this out. Boom. Just even like the little toss, it was just almost like, the way you threw that.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a really well done. Sometimes you see some big league caliber double play there with Berrien. Run, toss, yeah. Yeah, there were other, Isaac Pacheco had 4 hits this week, and he had a home run, I think 2 doubles and a home run. Still doesn't look quite as good as he looked at the end of last year. Campos, he's a funny player, man. He's just not what I expected, man. He hit 300 this week, went 6 for 20. I didn't have much power this week, but like 3 walks and 2 strikeouts or 2 walks, 3 strikes, he just makes way more contact than I expected. And a lot of it is hard. What do we have here? Is this the
Justin Big just double from earlier? Yeah.
Yeah, and then he had a home run later. Yeah, Justice Bigby. And then, you know, we mentioned Campos, we mentioned Young, we mentioned most of the hitters. I do like that you picked up Jack O'Loughlin. One of the more bizarre lines you'll see. 2 starts, was it 10 innings, 10 hits, 0 runs.
Yeah.
I think today it was like 8 hits and 0 runs somehow in 5 innings. I don't know how he pulled that off. But yeah, it was... And they it's Jack O'Loughlin, they call him. O'Loughlin is easier for me to say, but yeah, and then Carlos Pena continues to pitch pretty well. We saw Garrett Berhan not look very good at all, but he was also not helped by that calamitous defensive inning. Just ridiculous. But I've actually seen him live twice now, both times against Lansing, and both times it was the same thing. It's just a sinker that doesn't really miss any bats. And his slider is okay. And normally his changeup is pretty good, but I don't think he threw many in this game. And then he was out after 3 innings, I think. They brought in Beanline. And then we got to see.
So Travis Fernander, by the way, I want to mention that real quick because we have a radar gun, right? And I wouldn't think twice of anything that I would have saw on the stadium gun. But on the stadium gun, I had him 92, 93. The radar gun had him at 95, 96. And He had a slider yesterday. His slider has been like, eh, but it had a little more depth to it. It had a lot more bite yesterday. So I don't know. The increase in velocity has always been around 93, 94, but I did notice an increase in velocity with the slider. I was just like, holy shit.
Yeah, he had a really good inning. I think he.
Yeah.
It's like clean inning, or did he pitch two? I don't remember.
No, he had a clean inning, yeah.
There was a couple strikeouts in a row, and it was, why is Erie the only Tigers minor league team to provide game highlights to their YouTube homepage? I didn't know they did that. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know. They don't promote it that much. Actually,
I don't know if that's Sam doing that. I don't know if it's Greg doing that. I don't know.
I think it's Greg, and it's a combination of Greg and Sam. And as far as why, I can tell you this. Simply put, lack of personnel. That's as simple as that. Like Toledo, usually from when I'm dealing with Toledo the last few years, they usually have some sort of intern from either Bowling Green or University of Toledo nearby. And they'll take care of all that stuff. They'll do all the social media and all that. But it really depends on what the team has in mind. Lakeland, I can tell you this right now, they have nobody down there. Literally, the staff is pretty much bare bones. And so as far as West Michigan goes, I think there's a production team in place there too. Yeah, Ray, we're hopefully going to be out there this week for Great Lakes, because I was just talking about this with Chris yesterday. I really like that field a lot. I don't know. That field to me, it's that when you look out from, so I was in the broadcast area last time. You look out that way and you see all the seating out there with the fire pits and everything. It looks really cool. And then the way they have the interior with where the vending is for the food places, it's just really cool because it's easily slip in and out of the rain and go in there, and really good seats overall. So hopefully we'll be out there. I'm hoping they're out there Wednesday, Thursday, maybe even Saturday, because that's a free time. And I hope we'll get to meet you, Ray. That'd be cool.
Yep.
But no, yeah, that's the reason why, Stan. There's just lack of personnel, really. That's why we do what we do, because people are looking for that kind of stuff, and we're trying to provide a service as much as possible because there's a lot to cover. You know what's funny is there's a couple like the Boston Red Sox prospect sites, unaffiliated ones. They have an era of gatekeeping to them. They're just like, we've been doing this for a while, and you guys are the new guys, or I don't know, like this weird, maybe it's more in my head kind of thing. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Like, two sidetracked again.
Yeah.
Getting back to the bullpen, that's what I wanted to go into too. It was in terms of solid pitching performance. Again, West Michigan got some good pitching performances that, again, even from a standpoint of their bullpen, which has been Jack Anderson, who we've liked, he had a rough week. But as far as their, I'm trying to see if I can find it. Oh, here it is. Specifically, where is he? I lost him again. Gabe Sequeira, who we haven't talked about in a while, had a good week. And the other one was Aaron Haas, just only appearing in one inning, but did two innings, three strikeouts. And this was a little, like I said, it's a complete team effort that Stan alluded to earlier. Christian Totosa, again, two innings, one unearned run and two pair of strikeouts. But top down, outside of Garrett Burhan, it seems like Lakeland just pitched Lakeland. West Michigan pitched good all week.
Yeah, and they've got some, I think, future big leaguer here in the bullpen. Talking about Tyler Madison a little bit before, I think Trevin Michael has potential to make the big leagues too. We had, fortunately, Jerry was able to run all the numbers for Lakeland in StatCast, and some of these guys have some really interesting spin rates and things like that. So, yeah, I think with a little bit more seasoning, we might see some of these guys move up to Erie pretty soon to help in that bullpen. But yeah, it's a really good bullpen there in West Michigan. Not necessarily primetime names, but a lot of good arms with Eric Nellis, and you mentioned Haas and Anderson, and they just have a lot of different guys who can pitch out of that bullpen.
Yeah, and right now I'm interested in seeing how long they'll keep this together. But I think out of all the teams that in terms of pitching that will quote unquote stay together, I think the West Michigan bullpen will more than likely stay. Yeah.
And they may, right now, Erie and West Michigan are both it's early, right? But also not, because you got about a month, I think, left in the first half of the season. And you said Erie, I think, is a half game back, and West Michigan's one game back, and they're going to play the team they're behind, Great Lakes. So they may keep these guys together just to, whoever wins the first half gets an automatic playoff berth at the end of the season. So if they make the playoffs, and then they'll move guys up. But they like players to be part of a real kind of pennant chase, where you're feeling, you want the pressure and the excitement of actually winning games that matters, for to a certain extent, right? Because most of it, so much about the minor leagues is like development, or like you just see that, like you have a starting pitcher who's shoving and he's just out after five innings because that's the rules. That's just the way it is. And it's hard to feel like you're competing for real when that happens. It still feels kind of a little bit like an exhibition.
Yeah. And I like the way that, so Stop It and YouTube says, I like all this info privately because it keeps expectations in focus. I get tired of all the other sites comparing kids to Hall of Fame players. It doesn't do justice to the players or the fans. I would agree with you, because I think it's ridiculous, because they always try to do like, yeah, comps. And one of the things that, if the great James Chipman, who trained me in evaluating, he never liked the comps. He never liked it. And I don't like them either, because I just, quite frankly, it's ridiculous. Why am I going to compare a pitcher to Clayton Kershaw as an example, like a lefty, because he throws a certain way? I don't know. I just think that it's like, it's, I feel like a jackass. Flat out, I feel like a jackass, because it's just like, here's what I see, and here's what I like, and here's what people are saying. Take my, either my opinion or you don't. Not necessarily opinion, but here's the facts, and here's what I see, and this is what I think. So, if, for example, with Andre Lipsius, because they promoted him so hard, and because what I saw, because of his ability to be a solid defender, solid hitter, who would I comp him to? Well, I don't know, Lenny Harris? I don't, you know, I mean, like, I just don't understand why should that be necessary.
Yeah, it just, it paints a picture for people sometimes where it's hard for maybe somebody to take in, okay, here are his five tools, and here's his plate discipline, and here's his body type, and there you go. I like good comps. I don't like bad comps. That's it's tough, though. They're hard. And I try to make, part of the problem is that to make a proper comp, you usually have to make it to somebody who didn't do anything, right? Or was, yeah, like, just hang around for a little bit, because most of these guys aren't going to be, like, you don't compare Colt Keith to, like, Chipper Jones. You're like, no, he's not going to be a Hall of Fame switch hitting third baseman for 20 years. But there are certain things you can say. His swing reminds me of this guy's swing, or he's got this kind of body type. And when I make a full comp, it's usually, like, Brant Herder, my comp to him is Brian Flynn, former Tigers pitcher who was traded to Florida and pitched in parts of four or five big league seasons, but was never, he didn't have a big league career. He was a leaguer. And I think that makes my prospect. People don't get excited about that. A lot of people probably don't remember Brian Flynn. Who was it? Somebody, I remember in one of the broadcasts this year, I think they were comparing him to Cliff Lee. Who were they? They were comparing somebody to Cliff Lee. He was a Miley. I was like, I don't know.
But to me, I think that, okay, if you are a baseball fan and you're watching somebody pitch or hit, and you watch enough baseball, you can do the comp in your own head. Like, for example, when I did the Roberto Campos, when I was doing that story, I looked at his numbers, like, it sounded familiar to me. So I went back and saw that his numbers were very similar to Colt Keith at West Michigan last year. Doesn't mean he's Colt Keith. He's a completely different player. But even like, sure, just,
that's like a statistical comp. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, the statistical comp. But just even just, this, you can say Brent Hiller reminds me of former Padre Yankee Sterling Hitchcock, because he's a lefty who, like, there's a lot of ways you can do that. But then again, I'm also making an obscure reference. And for, I just think fans and people who watch the game already in their mind will see what they see. So if they see somebody, they're like, oh, does that remind me of? Oh, they could be, for example, somebody who's grew up watching the Cincinnati Reds. Oh, that guy looks like Chris Sable to me. Or Al Morris. I don't know.
Is it because he has goggles on? Is that why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I try not to make reckless cops. Like I said, I liked looking for them because it's fun to find one that it's good, but it's most of the time they're not appropriate at all. So
yeah, it's not fair. It's not fair to the kid at all. So in terms of, there was a lot of injuries. at Lakeland. Yeah, Lakeland. So, I mean, we saw that in his last start, it was, I think it was Chris Miller or Chris Williams, who was on the IL to.
That's it. Joe's got it. Sorry.
Okay. So Joey Wentz got compared to Cole Hamels and Cliff Lee.
Yeah, that's right. Like,
sorry. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you say, okay, he's a big lefty, then sure.
He's Randy Johnson, yeah. Then.
Everybody gets compared to Randy Johnson. For a while, every short guy got compared to Dustin Pedroia. It was like he was the weirdest thing. The more unique you were, the more other people would get compared to you.
But, where's my Mike Hampton references?
Mike Hampton, yeah.
Yeah. So you, Chris, you investigate that question and stop it asked. So in terms Lakeland, so Zara Benitez, who's been the hottest hitter that Lakeland's had all season, hit the IL with, I believe it was a leg injury. And then we saw this week, Sean Gunther, who the Tigers signed back in November, we had a cup of coffee with the Marlins back in 2021, coming back from surgery. He pitched a rehab. He pitched two innings this week. He pitched the opener yesterday. Gregory Delisle on the 7-day IL. And in terms of numbers this week, Lakeland pitching actually was not that bad. It's just the last couple of weeks, their staff's been really bad. But on the hitting side of things, they had no home runs at all. There were no home runs. They've only hit four in the last 2 weeks. And I know that the Florida State League, it's a hard league to hit home runs, period. But there was nothing down in Bradenton whatsoever. And get back to what I was talking about, the pitching. Pitching-wise, a lot better. Trent Melton out there, it's just a matter of time. I could see him in West Michigan probably by the middle of June when you're talking about the first half of the season gets over with. And Lakeland will be screwed. Cole Patton pitched. I think Cam Brown, too, the Central Michigan grad, pitched as well. And MX9 in the YouTube chat, when you stink, they stop comparing you to people. Touche. Can't argue that. Touche. But overall, yeah, Lakeland pitched a lot better this week. And Stan asked a question about the typical week for a positional player and pitcher in the Florida Complex League. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, it depends on if you're a domestic player or if you're an international player. And sometimes even the domestic, they will take English language classes, or some of the domestic guys will have a Spanish class. There's stuff going on down there that doesn't revolve around baseball every day. But yeah, for the most part, it's not a whole lot different than any other minor leaguer. You've got your days where you're lifting weights. You got your days where you're doing cardio. You got your days where you're in the field doing drills.
I was going to say, there's a lot of drills. I was going to say.
And they do play a lot of games that just aren't, they don't keep box scores or whatever. They'll play scrimmages against other complex league teams. They'll play scrimmages against one another. Yeah, it's a lot of instruction and a lot of getting in shape mentally and physically.
And
that ball is gone. Such a all time.
For Blood Right. Blood Right, thank you for the $5 on chipping into our chat, on our super chat this evening. Yeah, and one of the things I did pick up on when I was down in Lakeland, Chris, when you talk about the complex league guys, so they have when you walk into Lakeland, they have the fence, and you see the fields and all these fields back there, like the backfields, and then because the main field's to the left and then the backfields are on the right. There was probably three or four simulation games going on towards the end of when I was there, when the minor leaguers started coming to the camps. But a lot of times you'll see the roving instructors out there too. Artie Banger, who used to be the AA manager, was now the, right, told me this earlier and I'm drawing a blank.
Outfield. Instructor.
Instructors. And you know what's funny? I think it was Artie, was it Artie? No, never mind. I'm trying to remember the player. Or I was trying to remember the coach who noticed that I had a Lakeland or a London Tigers hat on. And
was that at the barbecue or was it the?
No, I was waiting to talk to Wilmer Flores, and I was sitting there with my Lakeland or my London Tigers hat on, and all of a sudden this guy is like they're walking by all the coaches and there's some players, and he says, "Hey, is that a London Flying or a London Tigers hat on or your hat?" And I said, "Yes," and he's, "Oh, I played on that team." I'm like, what's his name? And I totally forgot.
I think that might be him. Yeah, I want to say, would that have been like 1990?
Yeah, when they won the Eastern League title, I think 92, 93, I want to say.
Yeah.
So maybe it was him. Now that I think about it. I'll look that up real quick. But We did get a couple questions too online, Chris. Did you see those questions we got earlier?
I missed them. Sorry, but I did want to mention it. Was it Stan who asked, or who was it asked about the estimate of percentage? 19% is actually pretty close. I think it's usually about 20% of guys on a double A roster will make it big leagues, at least for a cup of coffee. One out of every five. Doesn't mean, they just, sometimes it's 6 years later. Sometimes it's a guy who's already been in the big leagues back, like Mark Leiter or something like that. But about 20% of the roster by the end of the year.
By the way, you want to go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
No, sorry. You go.
No, you're good. I was looking at it. Look at the questions. I was looking at the London Tigers roster from, it was 1990 that they won the championship in. And former Yankee Chris Chamberlain was a manager. So it's just strange to see that because I never associated him with the Tigers whatsoever. Or
he's the infamous walk-off home run where he's just bowling people over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was the 1990 London Tigers, and I'm trying to look up the roster right now.
I think Baylor was on that team.
Yeah, I think, you know what, it probably was him. If it was him, then I have to ask Greg.
Because I remember, I think this was something we were looking at when we, one of our trips to Erie last year, and we were looking at all the future big leaguers on, there were like 20 on that team, I thought. Or was it an extra, maybe it was a different team that he was, or like, it was the 2010 team. I don't know. They had a team there at some point that had a lot of future big leaguers on it.
So that 90 team, so it was already, okay, so it was already then, yeah, because he, so that team had, wow, this is a list of whose name, so this is the names of names, if you will. So this, let me see if I can, I'm going to share it because, oh, wow, that's cool. They have the, you can also check out the various Tigers teams they had, but I'll have to say something to Greg next time I see him then, because he pointed out my hat there. Okay, yeah. That's Ken Williams, but I just wanted to show, look at this cool logo. The Estonian Tigers, the original Lakeland Tigers, the Fayette Generals, Glen Falls, Bristol, all cracked out Tigers, that cracked out Tiger look. But let me pull up that team here real quick, that 1990 team. So Artie was on that team. You had Rico Bronya. You had David Haas. Oh, I don't know, that's a name. That was a Tiger prospect everybody was talking about. Rusty Meacham. Kirk Knutson, another name I remember. Kirk Knutson. Yeah, there was, oh, Steve Pegasus, who never really amounted to much, but there was some hype behind him, too. Yeah, so anyways, who's who of, like, Tiger prospects that never did anything. I'm not trying to sound mean when I say that, but it's true. They didn't. But Rico Bronya, of course, more known to be a Philly than a Tiger, really, but I remember the hype behind him as well, so. That's your flashback from obscure. Maybe you lost 10% of our audience on that one. But all right, Chris, we had the question. We did. So somebody did ask us about reversal combos in the outfield.
Did we have a question? Where was it?
On Twitter.
I'm looking. I don't see it. Oh, wait, there. I know you got questioned this some last week, but do you think combos can take the field defensively? And explain.
Yes, it was.
I think he'll play center field throughout the minor leagues, and if he makes the majors, I think he may be able to fill in occasionally at center field, but I do think his best position is probably going to end up in right field. He's not a plus runner. That's the main thing. Like, he's an average runner, home to first, and above average underway, and he's still in 19. I don't know how much bigger he's going to get. He's a big kid already, and it's the big athletic fellow that's not like he's going to add a ton of weight, but he probably will lose a step or half a step. I don't know. I don't project him to play a ton of center field at the big league level, but
yeah, that's a really good observation. That's exactly what happened yesterday. He jumped out a little bit and read that wrong completely. So David, I like what David in YouTube said. Combo seems like he has good range, but he has a bad first read. And I think it's also, it depends too, because on center field, sometimes he gets a better jump than I do. I've seen a better jump from him in center field than I do in right field. That's just me, though.
No, absolutely. And you see the same thing from Riley Green and from Parker Meadows. The angles are completely different in the corners. It's a lot harder than people realized to go from playing center to go from to playing a corner. The guys who can do it seamlessly are really talented. And I think a lot of that is just reps. You learn the way the ball looks coming off the bat, the way it's going to spin, how it's going to react. But yeah, like earlier last week, I saw Parker Meadows misplay a couple balls in right field, because he's not used to playing a ton of right field. he has throughout the minors. He's so used to playing center field. And we saw Riley Green in spring training. I think he played a little bit of left. It was like, uh-oh. Like, that doesn't look good. So it happens. But yeah, I think I still remain impressed with Campos' defense overall. I never call him a butcher. I don't know who did that, but I don't know if he said we're going to be like a plus defender, but I think he'll be a fine defender. And his bat is just really impressive. Yeah, that was that. Nick, let's see. I'm trying to look at somebody had some fun with your. Did you see that?
What?
Tyler Cool had some fun with your Justice Bigby.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Named a whole bunch of different songs. That's funny. Let's see. We got Deadly Ninja Beast said, given the state of the pitching prospect, how many pitchers should we take in the draft? They went pitching heavy last year after, what was it? Once the ninth round came around.
All pitchers.
Except for Dom Johnson.
Yeah.
Dom Johnson. But yeah, I would expect, three of their first six picks to be pitchers at least. We didn't say it specifically, but the Lakeland roster this year is just bad. It's not a lot of talent there. Not playing terribly well because there's not much there. And bummer, because those guys have to come up eventually, or they need to bring in all sorts of new players. But
yeah,
it's been unfortunate. Santana was playing really poorly, then got hurt. Peyton Graham has not done much. Luke Gold has not done much.
There's nobody in the complex league that's going to come over and help out right now either. And that's why you and I were talking about when to go down to Lakeland. I'm not till that after the draft, which is what it's funny that Sergio brings up, looking forward to what the pick will be at 3. And by the way, our draft coverage will probably kick up this week. So expect some draft art. Like, there's going to be a lot more draft coverage. I'm running up a mock draft for Fansided, and I'm going to do some stuff for the site. So I'm going to be helping out Chris and we're going to be merged in the draft. And then by the time the draft comes the next day after the draft, we're going to forget all about it because that's what happens to us every year. But David Means also brings up another interesting point too about the West Michigan outfielders versus Junior Perez in Lansing. And he did like Perez on that first hit, that first ball by
Campos.
Yeah. He tracked that. He had a really good eye on that. And even the timing of the jump on that was really well done.
Yeah, and he may just be more natural. He's the guy who only hits against West Michigan.
Yeah. One for 44 against the lead or something like that?
He was like 9 for 27 against West Michigan with 4 home runs, and 1 for 42 against everybody else. It was one of the most absurd splits I've ever seen. The reverse, Isaac Pacheco, who has all 4 of his home runs against Lansing. Yeah, I think that's it for the questions. We had somebody else they were having a discussion under a highlight from Justin Henry Malloy about, call him up. And he said, real question, who was the last prospect that Bright had who had a high OPS all the way up the ladder, then improved at AAA? So remember, Atlanta developed this kid until this year. They have a real solid, if not spectacular, track record of slugging prospects, hitting MLB ground running. Yeah, I don't know. I think Kerry Carpenter actually had a better OPS in Toledo than he did in Erie last year, I think, briefly. I think Ryan Kreidler did, too, in 2021. But who are we looking at here? We're looking at Langford.
Yeah, a lot of people think he's going to go to number 3 to Detroit. And
yeah, I really like Langford's swing. I was listening to a podcast. It was interesting. I was listening to a D1 baseball podcast on the way to West Michigan on Saturday. We drove separately for, I think, maybe the first time ever.
Yeah, it was weird. I didn't like it.
I didn't like it either. And we did it to save time. I don't know why we did it, but it ended up you got there before me. And I was like, oh, all right. But in any event, they were talking about Dylan Cruz. Dylan Cruz has been, he's the 1-1 pick, basically. Everybody says that, rushing baseball. But they said that he's got a ground ball rate north of 50% this year and an extremely high batting average on those ground balls, like way too high. Whereas Langford, his ground ball rate is like 25%. He's hitting almost everything in the air and hitting it hard. And I like his swing more than Dylan Cruz. I don't know if I would take him first ahead of Cruz now, just because Cruz has been destroying the SEC. But it's not like Langford's not playing well. I think he has more home runs than Cruz. He's just not hitting 480. He's hitting 400. Tough break. Yeah, it's a great year to have a top 3 pick. It's Paul Skeens. It looks like a generational pitcher, they're saying. He's doing stuff that they haven't really seen. This is Steven Strasburg level stuff, but he's probably not going to be the first pick. He might go second. If he doesn't go second and it goes Cruz Langford, that's going to be where it gets really interesting. Do the Tigers feel secure taking a pitcher at all in the top three? Would they go Walker Jenkins, who I've heard that they really like? And he's a guy that some people think he might go second overall. A high school outfielder from North Carolina who's got hitting power, and they're saying he's playing a better center field this spring. Kind of reminds me of Riley Green. Yeah, it's a great year to have a top five pick.
Yeah, and I'm glad the hype's kind of going away from Max Clark a little bit, because I think Max Clark's going to be a good talent, but I just think it's going to take, if Tiger fans want somebody right away, it's not Max Clark. I think Max Clark will eventually be effective, but I just don't think he's going to be, in other words, I think Max Clark's going to be a fine major leaguer, but it's just going to take some time versus somebody like, I haven't really checked out Jenkins, but in terms of Wyatt Langford out in just his overall skill set, if the Tigers are somebody who's going to be really coming up pretty quickly, it would be him. But, yeah, you said Paul Skeens, right? Is that what you said?
Does
LSU saw that reputation, Chris, of overburdening their pitchers?
No, not necessarily. He's pitching. Most college programs don't do that anymore, where they pitch a guy like 130 pitches or whatever. They've been giving them 6-7 innings just about every start, as long as there's not weather. I don't think they're taxing him more than any other college program at this point. It used to be, but Rice was the number one. Rice would just burn through every arm they had. There is a problem for LSU. LSU's got an elite offense, but they don't really have a great pitching staff this year. So they might have the first and second picks in the draft, but they might not even get to Omaha, honestly, because pitching staff is a little bit iffy. So that'll be something interesting to follow. And it's one of the fun things about, so there's basically 2 months till the draft. We got about 1 month left in college baseball. We're like the final week or two of the regular season, and then you got tournaments, and then you've got Omaha. And this is when some guys just step up, right? This is when the Alex Fido time, where in the past, though, you'd get drafted, and then they'd step up and people go, oh man, I wish we'd have drafted that guy before. But now you can see it all. So that's like Kate Horton last year from Oklahoma went off down the stretch, ended up getting, was he a top 10 pick? I think the Cubs took him 9th or 10th, I think. And so somebody's going to do that this year. Somebody's going to go off and jump up the board. I don't think into the top five, but at least it'll be fun watching. And we're going to be paying a lot more attention and writing more about it soon.
Yeah. So draft show, by the way, we'll be streaming the whole draft, the whole entire first round, on the Modern League website, or on our YouTube page, Sunday, July 9th. So mark your calendars down. I've already done 3 posters about it. I'm actually going to do a commercial for it, because it's the 6th year we've done this, the 6th annual Tigers draft show. And we're going to be live from Chris's house this year, back to where we're more familiar with the big splash. So if there's a big splash pick that unexpected, I'll be jumping into a pool belly first. Because I'm say this apparently, but no, there's one guy that fits that description, by the way, that I can see happening is a Hurtson
Waldrip.
Yeah,
exactly. He's got absolutely diabolical stuff.
He's
got a splitter. He's got 2 nasty breaking balls. He's got a fastball. It sits 97 up to 100. But it's like a pure reliever delivery. And he's got a terrible ERA this year. It's like a 5.5 ERA. So what the hell's going on there? But he's a guy that I could see a pro organization taking him, fixing him in 3 weeks or a month, and him getting to the big leagues almost immediately. Or he's a guy that maybe he's the next. Who was the dude the White Sox took? Carson Fulmer?
Carson Fulmer, yeah.
Carson Fulmer, they took him, and he was ended up with the Tigers. He could just never throw enough strikes. So,
over the top. Like, you don't see that very often.
It's filthy stuff. It's really nasty, but not enough consistent strikes, and he get hit way too hard. One thing they were saying on that podcast is that he might just be way too predictable. Like, he's throwing fastballs and fastball counts and breaking balls and breaking ball counts, and everybody just knows what's coming.
Because he transferred from a smaller school, right?
I think Southern Miss, I believe.
Yeah.
I think he and Chase Dollander went Southern Miss. Dollander is another guy who, he was a guy who was talked about going in the top three at the very beginning of the year, and he got passed by Skeens pretty quickly, and he hasn't been terribly good. But let's say Tennessee goes on a run and he's out there looking like he did last year, he's a guy who creeped back up into the top five because, yeah, you know, people really liked him heading into this year.
Yeah, this is a guy right here that they could tweak something and just go on a roll for Florida. So we'll see what happens. You're right, though. I always forget that aspect of the College World Series where you see some guys just that were kind of like, floating by, and then all of a sudden come out of nowhere and become the next big to get the draft pushed into the top 10, top five picks. But yeah, there's plenty of time. We're going to be, like I said, we're going to be hitting the draft pretty hard here in the next couple of weeks or so. So every show, actually, you know what? I've just declared that every show we're going to be talking about the draft, at least the last 10 minutes of the show.
All right. You know what? I will start doing some articles. Maybe we'll do it position by position.
Yes.
Just to take a look at it, because that'll help us get the idea about some guys who the Tigers might take with their second and third pick, which are still top 50 picks. So, yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah. And this, again, this will be the first time that this draft will not be predictable. Like I said, this is a Mark Connor draft. So this is going to be a completely different draft profile. And what I'm going to like about this is that it's going to be guys that, for example, that fit almost, I don't want to say Cole Keith status, because Cole Keith was, when the Tigers drafted Cole Keith, it was different than when they normally do. So that's why I said, because at the time, the Tigers have had a type, but this time there's not really a type that you can pin with. So
they rarely went after high upside high school players later, like after the first couple of rounds. They tried it in 2007. What was the year they got Casey Crosby and Daniel Fields and
2013,
it was a long time ago. Yeah. It didn't work out.
2009. I want to say 2008, 2009, right?
No. It was one of those years, and then they went right back to taking college relievers. But yeah, I think, not to get too deep into it, but I could see a situation where Langford is available and they go Walker Jenkins, people lose their mind. But I think that it could just be that they like his hit tool more, or they like his power combination more, or they think they're the same and think he's got a better chance to play plus defense. We'll see. I'll be surprised. We think there's a pretty clear top three, but time will tell.
There's not going to be a situation. I think this time around, there's not going to be a situation where they're going to pick a high school pitcher out of Oklahoma, out of nowhere or anything. And what's up?
There are a couple. So Noble Meyer looks like a spectacular high school pitcher who may go top 10. Depending. Some teams just won't do it at all. Thomas White is a lefty who's throwing up upper 90s with some good stuff. So those are options. I don't think they're going to go that route, but people go, just take the guy who's going to get here quicker. You take Langford, and you just can't do that. You've got to take the guy who you like more, because the comparison I always make is the Marlins took J.J. Bleday fourth, the Tigers took Riley Green fifth. Who do you think's happier? The Marlins already traded Bleday for A.J. Puck, didn't they? Like, he was supposed to be the advanced college bat, and he struggled. Riley Green shot through the minors, got to the big leagues before J.J. Bleday. You just got to take the guy you like more.
Yeah, it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be fun. I think this year is going to be a situation. Somebody mentioned Joe Hunter, maybe another Henry Davis situation.
So there's another thing we can get into briefly. They've expanded the bonus pools. So Pittsburgh's slot for the first overall pick, I think, is $9.7 million. And I think the largest bonus ever is still Torkelson at 8.4, or at least the largest bonus in the slot era. So if Pittsburgh took Henry Davis, they liked him, but they were able to get like a $4 million or $3.5 million haircut, something like they saved a ton of money. And that allowed them to go get, what was it, Bubba Chandler, Anthony Solometo, and Lonnie Hughes Jr., or somebody, I forgot his name, but some higher upside guys. They really spread it out. A lot of people don't think they should mess around with Dylan Cruz this year and do that now. But like I said, I don't think they'll have to spend all of their top pick on Dylan Cruz. They can get him the largest bonus ever, at least the modern era, and still save like $100,000 or $1 million to $500,000 to use on other guys. So I don't think they're going to mess around too much. The one situation I could see is if they have Cruz and Langford basically similar, to take whoever takes less money. But I really think they're just going to go Cruz. It's part of what makes it intriguing.
By the way, Henry Davis is a red ass. Watching him in Erie, just, it's like he is, talk about a gamer. Like, this guy, I think he doesn't wear batting gloves, A. I don't think he wore batting gloves. And B, he had a mile. He got the ball really hard. He impressed me when we saw him out there.
He's got like Spencer Strider legs too. It's like his muscles are busting through his pants. He's a muscular dude, and he's tearing up Double A right now.
Yeah, he looks like a halfback out there. I'm dead serious. Yeah. He's like just
It's like Saquon Barkley legs.
Yeah, dumb. Yeah, that's a good way to put it there. But at any rate, thank you so much for listening to the Minor League Report podcast. So tomorrow in the morning, sometime before 11, I almost got the recap almost done. You'll find the latest recap. We're going to have a StatCast article behind our Patreon. So Patreon.com/Minor League Report if you want access to it. I'm also going to do something like, so we're finishing up the scouting reports for our updated top 25. I think for the scouting reports, we're going to open those up so everybody can take a look at those. So that will be probably unlocked tomorrow. I was trying to put them on the Patreon. Well, like I said, we're going to put some more different stuff on the Patreon. And also, Jerry's going to have another article this week coming out. So Jerry's been, shout out to Jerry, by the way. Jerry's just, we gotta have him back on the podcast soon. It's not that I don't forget to ask, but I think he's just, I always think he's busy. He had Mother's Day today. He's got a wife and kids and all that stuff. So I gotta, go to our website, tigermlreport.com for the recap and our podcast. We appreciate everybody checking us out tonight. We'll be back next Sunday, same bat time, same bat channel at 9 o'clock. And Motor City Metrics will be back on Thursday to recap the Pirate Series. And if there's anything that happens tomorrow, the Tigers have an off day tomorrow, and I guarantee you there will be some sort of movement. To what extent, I don't know. But I'll be down there for the series. And Chris, anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
No. Baseball. It's fun.
I want to apologize to Stan.
Yeah, man. That's awesome.
I want to apologize. I want to apologize to Stan, too. I was going to show up, like I said, just some circumstances beyond my control were there, but I will be down at the ballpark a little more, so I apologize. I wanted to meet up with Stan really bad too, because I always like meeting with people, talking baseball and talking shop. It's funny. Nick Splane opening day, and that was, we had a beer together. It was funny. He's like, "You want a beer?" It's like, the so cold, almost like
that's so bad. Yeah, the one time we had on the podcast, and both of us missed it, right?
Yeah. So
it felt bad. Yeah. I'm checking. Okay, so Tuesday's game for the Whitecaps is at 11 a.m. That might be interesting.
Yeah.
And look, I was just thinking, just Thursday, the Tigers don't play, but they play at 6. Maybe Thursday, but then we have a show. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Until then, have a good week, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.